Hello, Satai Ryan.
Hello, Satai Rachel. What are you doing here, running around playing ambassador? Rachel, what are you doing? What are you doing here?
I'm here to co-host our podcast.
Are you feeling yum-yum about it?
Yeah.
Would Soul Hunter have said yum-yum in this episode of Babylon 5 that we watched? Would he be the guy?
No.
Who would be the guy or girl or other that would have said yum-yum?
I think it's Garibaldi.
Gotta disagree. I think it's Nagrath. I think Nagrath. You know I'm right.
I do know you're right. Yet again.
Nagrath would have...
You ask me, knowing that I'm going to be wrong, and then school me.
Nagrath would be like, price too high, yum, yum. That's what... So, we're Ryan Rachel. Our show is Yum Yum Podcast because of the iconic line of dialogue from Star Trek Discovery second season, yum, yum. It was so iconic that it, in fact, traveled back in time and made the writer of Babylon 5 come up with the notion of Babylon 5. He was in the shower, and he was thinking about, like, these two different ideas, and then he thought, then he said, yum, yum, and he went, Babylon 5, I have to write a whole episode about a soul-hunting man. That's how iconic it is.
No, that's the logic that you used in unappreciated masterpieces.
Right. Here, what is it then? That the line yum yum was so impactful that it spawned a new genre of science fiction. That's what it is.
No, it's just that it changed our lives forever and it is the way that we view things now is through the yum-yum lens.
Through the prism of yum-yum.
The prism of yum-yum.
Through our prism of yum-yum 5, in which we are going through episode by episode Babylon 5 from a rewatch perspective. That's right, rewatch perspective, meaning spoilers, because we are looking at this from that perspective. For this one, Rachel, we are looking at season 1, episode 2, Soul Hunter. Woo! Are you scared?
Unsettled.
Well, the description according to the DVD booklet is as such: he's feared by all. And no wonder. The collector of souls, Morgan Shepherd, who slipped aboard is a renegade who murders beings instead of waiting for them to die.
Every moment he remains here places this station in terrible danger. Someone is about to die, Commander. It would be at his hands.
Rachel, what is your history with this episode of Babylon 5?
You adore the absolute fucking shit out of this episode. And I watched it for the first time on my own. And you, like, I watched, like I mentioned, the first couple of episodes of Babylon 5 on my own, one after the other. And I remember watching it being like, Ryan's mentioned this so many times, but I didn't appreciate it fully on the first watch. I was like, oh, this is solid. And then watching it.
Solid. Let that one sink in, people.
Solid.
Yeah, solid. Like soul, I'm adding soul in there because we're soul hunting. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, I was just desperate.
Apparently that one was so good it went above Rachel's head.
No, I was just desperate.
It flew by her. We need to grapple it and bring it back to the station for us to look at it.
No.
So you were saying you're a little bit underwhelmed by it the first time.
I was just trying to ignore your dumb answer. No, so I was just like, yeah, that was good. That was as good as the first one. This is holding up. This is feeling like it's forming a good path for itself. And it made sense to me because these first two episodes are not linked in plot, but they are both very heavy in lore and world building.
Agreed. As you stated, I've been a big fan of this episode in the past, having been raised with the first season in particular. There are certain episodes and certain performances within episodes that linger with one, and Soul Hunter was always one that I enjoyed because it is an interesting monster of the week type episode, if you will, where you got a random guy on this ship who's causing trouble and a fuss. The idea of a Soul Hunter is was and is very fascinating to me. I think it's an interesting idea to throw into your sci-fi world, but I was always enamored with this episode in terms of the performance of William Morgan Shepherd as the Soul Hunter. I've always really liked this episode from a performance basis rather than necessarily the script or the characters or the lore of a Soul Hunter. Mm-hmm. But more that when I think of Babylon 5, there's lots of guest star characters in there. There's lots of one-offs. But I think, I don't think of it like X-Files where you have like, or Star Trek in some ways, where you have, this week we have the rogue villain. There's plenty of those, for sure, and plenty in season one, but they don't make as big of an impact as those shows' versions of that idea does. But this particular episode does have that impact. It's because of the lead, because of his performance. I've always remembered it, and he's always been a memorable one-off baddie in a show that I don't often think of one-off baddies in. So it also has that specialty to it of, well, here's this creepy old dude with a weird third eye on his head and he senses death and he's just like this old guy. And that's a threat of that. It's a threat like this old man running around.
I never thought of it as an eye.
I don't know what it is. We can talk about that. I don't know what it is, but it's interesting. Whatever. His makeup design is memorable, to say the least. It's not just he has a bump on his head. He has a whole head prosthesis and a weird thing in the center of his head.
I was appreciating the depth and details in his costume as Soul Hunter, but also Delenn, because we get more close-ups that show off the details of her makeup.
For better or for worse, in some ways. Because I was noticing in one scene on the left side of her head, the bone wasn't joining to her cheekbones, so it was kind of just hanging there, but the other side was, so it was very distracting. But
I didn't notice it in the negative way. I was just like
no.
The bone always looks fake.
It doesn't look like a bone for a start, like on her in particular. It looks like it on others like Naroon, but that's a conversation for another day. What is your opinions on the episode now? We've watched the show several times. We know that the Soul Hunters come back in a TV movie, but overall, this is their only major ripple in the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's lore heavy, lots of that. But what did you feel about it, visiting it again?
I thought it was a thing of beauty.
Really?
This time. Because it feels so well crafted.
Mm.
And after suffering the abuse of Star Trek Discovery, it was even more sweet.
I am on the opposite end. I found myself a little bit listless with this episode. I thought, okay, it made me think about a lot of things, but I didn't really engage and feel a lot of things other than my appreciation for the Soul Hunter's performance is even stronger than it has been in previous watches of it. I found myself kind of checking my watch a bit because there's an interesting idea here, but it felt like they were padding it out and stretching out for time, which we can definitely get into discussing. Like, for me, I found myself noticing that there was the same scene repeated over and over again in this episode. Many a times we're told what a Soul Hunter is and what they do and why they do it. And we're told many a times what Delenn is all about and what she's up to. Whilst also with her not actually giving us the information fully because we've got to savor this for future arcs of the story. But as its own individual episode, I thought it was fine. But it was very reminiscent of the pilot to me in terms of lore and world building over character stuff. For instance, whose story was this episode?
Yeah, it's an uneven footing between Sinclair and Delenn.
What about Franklin? He was involved too. Or is it the Soul Hunter story? It's a little bit unfocused in that department because it's focusing on giving us lore and world building and telling us about the Minbari through this outsider character. So that was some of my issues with it. But I did still enjoy this. This is one that still holds a special place in my heart. But just talk about revisiting it and looking at it, I can see why it's in the lower rated episodes of the show.
Yeah. Like, the reason that I thought it was a thing of beauty is because I'm comparing it to Discovery. But also because I was specifically watching it looking for details of like, oh, that's really neat. They have like that little thing there and that shows us this. And this actor's decision relates to this thing that's going to happen later. And this is setting up Franklin's character in a really specific way that's really important for how we understand and know him.
Let's talk about Dr. Franklin. We're in this stage of the early part of the show in which they are still introducing us to the main roster of characters that are in the opening credits. It takes like 6 or 7 episodes for everyone that's in the intro credits to actually be fully in the show, which is interesting.
And also, they don't cram characters in that we've met that don't need to be in this episode.
Yeah, Londo didn't need to be in this episode.
Jakar didn't need to be
Would have loved either. To have seen them.
Bastard Jakar, he said he knew nothing of this. Jakar! Yeah. Jakar!
Franklin is introduced here, and Franklin is a character that I've grown to appreciate over time. I've always been a big fan of doctor characters in my science fiction shows. They are usually my favorite characters in Star Trek. But for some reason, Franklin never truly grabbed me until the last watch or two of the show. Like the last watch we had before this one, Franklin was in my top 3 characters that I was following in the show. He really, really grabbed me. So he's one that I've had a up-y-down relationship, mainly going up and up as we go along. But what is your feelings and relationship been with Franklin? And what was it like to see him again here?
I think I started to enjoy Franklin more in the latter seasons. I think I really started to like him more after the STEM storyline sort of wraps up.
Okay.
I feel like that's the point where I'm like, okay, I feel like I get you a little bit better in your dealing with who you are instead of avoiding facing your problems.
Yeah. Okay. It was very interesting to see him in this first episode because he's so happy. And he's
so joyous. The way that he says hi to Sinclair is just...
It's the word I'd used is charged. He walks in with this, like, swagger. He's got this scarf over this trench coat. He just saddles up and he says, like...
medical bag there.
He might as well have just, like, done a finger gun action at Sinclair when he said, "Hey, Sinclair." I didn't know if he was super happy to see an old friend, was super happy to be getting this new job, or wanted the fuck. But I got all 3 energies from him in that just singular line delivery. And I smiled. Oh, look, this guy's happy to be here. This guy's like fully on board to be the doctor. And we get the little, we get the little back and forth at the beginning explaining what happened to the previous doctor and that Franklin's going to be the new guy. And the storyline that takes place is going to be his first storyline in the series, where his first patient is going to be the Monster Man, Soul Hunter, who we never get to find out their name. It's just Soul Hunter. And I like seeing Franklin again. I thought it was very weird, though, because I'm not used to him, even in this first season, being this happy.
Commander Sinclair, it's good to see you again.
And I wonder at what point we're going to see that shift with him. Because do you associate this version of Franklin with the one that we see in the rest of the season?
No. No, I do not think of Franklin as being cheerful.
So do you think it is his character actually has an arc, or do you think it is that the actor and the script perhaps found a different characterization for him?
I think the latter.
I think so too. I think Richard Biggs and maybe the script walked in being like, he's going to be the happy guy who's a little bit of a skeptic. But as the show goes along, we learn more about his background as a person and what he genuinely believes in. And those things kind of call for more serious portrayal from Richard Biggs to be less of a joker, less of a jovial boy. And I guess also we kind of need that, right, in the show out of our human characters.
Yeah.
Because Sinclair, although serious, he has a bit of a warm side to him. Ivanova, you know, stern but funny.
Russian, as she points out in this episode.
She's not a pessimist. She's a Russian. Garibaldi is cracking jokes left and right. He's a corny guy.
Yeah.
And I guess so you need someone like Franklin in the human cast of characters who's got more of solid convictions that are up front. And not saying he's not a fun guy. He has his moments, but he's a little bit more of a, well, workaholic.
Yeah, and I think a part of the way that our perception of Franklin changes through this episode is seeing how he responds to losing patience.
Yeah, or seeing how in this episode he responds to the greater existential questions in comparison to the other characters, because he's the character in this episode that rejects the notion of a soul and rejects the notion that you could capture a soul. And that is a fascinating thing to throw upon your character, and it makes sense. He's a scientist, he's the doctor.
But he doesn't fully align with the religion that we come to know that he has.
He kind of does and kind of doesn't, because
it feels a bit off, because like the part of the whole idea of the fundamentalists.
Foundationalists. Fundamentalists are different.
Part of the idea of the foundationalists as a religion is that like there's some truth in what all religions agree with, right?
Yeah.
And most religions agree on the idea of the soul, the spirit.
Yeah, but I think in this, to give it defense, I think Franklin objects to the idea that you use science to capture the soul.
Oh, yeah, that it's a literal thing.
Yes, and I think he objects to that notion of using scientific equipment to capture a metaphysical thing, which I think is completely in line with his character. And I agreed with him throughout the whole entire episode.
He convinced me.
I agree with him throughout the whole entire episode. Although, what did you think about at the end? He was swayed. He wanted to know what Sinclair saw. It kind of showed you that his convictions here could be swayed a bit.
His curiosity gets the better of him.
Yeah, he has like a really jovial mood about it. And then when Sinclair doesn't really want to fully say if he saw a soul in a little glass bowl or not, Franklin just doubles down again on his original convictions of like, best not to talk about that anyway, right? You could get sent on a long vacation if that's the case. And he just kind of goes back to what he believed at the start of the episode. But there's that evidence here with his character that he can shift his attitudes a little bit, but not fully.
And also that moment tells us an interesting thing about the show, because that's paired with Delenn saying that we were right about you, Sinclair. And Sinclair going, she's never going to finish that sentence.
Yeah, which is true.
She never does. But it makes it really clear that this show is going to leave things unsolved.
Delenn. No, it's okay. She's just sleeping. Whatever she had to say, we'll wait till she's back on her feet.
Yeah. But I'll bet you half a year's salary she doesn't finish that sentence.
The best part of Franklin in this episode is his interaction with Ivanova at CNC. I love the world-building touch that
if you can't afford a proper funeral and you've died on out in space, like at a space station like Babylon 5, they will just shoot your coffin into the sun nearby. I think that's an interesting and bleak touch. I don't know. I think it's bleak.
Yeah, it is. It is not as hopeful as the way that they do it in Star Trek.
No. It's not like there's a teary-eyed.
It's very different. And a eulogy. Part of that is because, like, that isn't a funeral that's for the family. Like, no, it's just a bureaucratic,
business.
Administrative task. And that's kind of why Franklin is there, and he just goes back to working on his pad thing, and it's a Vonova that goes, we need to stop and recognize this moment, and he has this sort of like, oh, yeah.
And that there, what you just described.
We should be doing this.
That there you just described, all done in two physical actions, no words. Going back to just shit on Discovery again, it's so weird to see stuff like that communicated without words, without telling. It showed us there. Were you just discerned there? That's you saw visually. Franklin was just about to step back and go out of CNC, but Ivanova had to stop him. She just gave him a little physical gesture, and then he went into the solemnness of being a part of a funeral, because Ivanova treats it like what it is. It's a funeral. She gives the eulogy or little speech that she gives, and it is a solemn, quiet moment. But you noticed, you picked up on that little tick there of he was just going to walk out. He's the caring doctor, but this is a bureaucratic thing at this point. They're just ejecting some guy who got stabbed to death into space. He wanted to go straight back to work, yep. Back to work. It's showing very minorly through body language and silence that he's a workaholic who cares, but he's just got that little bit of detachment there that Ivanova doesn't have. No. Ivanova is attached to life in a meaningful way, in a different meaningful way in comparison to Franklin, because then they have that conversation about life.
And that conversation is really interesting on its own. And there's another thing that I want to say about it, but I want to dive deeper into that conversation first.
Yeah.
Which is, so basically, Ivanova says, it doesn't matter if we live
200 years
as humans, we will still be that. We will still make mistakes.
The same mistakes.
Very, very clearly in allusion to the classic statement, to err is human.
Yes.
To make mistakes is to be human. So it doesn't matter how long we live, we will still be fuck-ups. It will still take us over half of our lives to figure out who we are and what we want to do.
And I love, there's so much to dig into with this conversation, because Franklin looks at it from his perspective, which is a scholarly perspective. His viewpoint, in a manner, is if we live long enough, we'll learn more, meaning that we will get better. The more we learn, the better we will be. The longer we are around, the more we'll learn, thus the better we'll be.
He approaches it, life, as a series of scientific experiments. Of, like,
and knowledge,
starting with
yeah.
our hypothesis, testing the hypothesis, learning, adapting, trying something new. It's a ongoing cycle of improvement and betterment. And he wants to see himself improve as a person and humanity.
While Ivanova looks at it from what he thinks is a pessimistic perspective, what she says is a Russian perspective, but is in a way...
And may just be both.
But what it is in a huge way, when you look at the show's perspective on life and death. We should not be these immortal beings that live forever, because eventually we will grow despondent and detached to the importance of life. The importance of life is failure. And in the case of this episode, death helps define life.
Yes.
And that is a part of what she's putting down. And you get so much knowledge of these two characters' worldviews from that conversation, without them just saying 100% what we have just said. There's a lot to intuit there, but there is stuff that is contextually there that we could point to and say, look, that's in this conversation, and you could go to this reasoning for these characters. He's a doctor, he's a scientist, his viewpoint that he bestows in that conversation would lead us to the perspective that we have just bestowed because he's a scientist, he's thinking from this from a scientific perspective, da-da-da-da-da, and his detachment, minorly so, about the guy's funeral, again, leads us to the stuff. And what we know about Ivanova, although she's rigid and stiff and very... but she's very frank. She says what she believes outright, and she does have a warmth and humanity underneath the coldness. See, she puts up that it's a front, what she's doing. She's putting up this harsh persona, but underneath this, she's got some wisdom and some knowledge that is a lot warmer in a way than Franklin, the caring doctor. Not to say that he doesn't have any of these things. It's not to say that he's a cold-hearted bastard, but between the two of them in this conversation, we walk away at the end of it, at least I do, on the side of Ivanova.
So there are another two kind of little things that I want to talk about with that scene. One is something that could have come off really fucking cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it has in other sci-fi that we've watched, which is the changing of from dust to dust, from stars to stars.
Right, right.
In the little speech that she gives at the kind of faux funeral.
Yeah.
Is it like, well, yep, that makes sense to say from dust to dust would kind of still work, but from stars to stars.
Yeah.
Makes it
as
really
they shoot
specific
him into a star, yeah.
And star and sci-fi specific.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that little touch, and it feels really earnest when she says it.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in other sci-fis, and it feels utterly ridiculous.
I think it's because we also, as viewers, as rewatchers, know that Ivanova is a deeply religious character. Mm-hmm. She's very Jewish. So there's a sincerity to her doing what we would consider a very spiritual thing in this scene because we know her to be a spiritual person.
Yeah. And that links into the other thing that I wanted to say, which was I really appreciated them stopping and showing that moment because it sets up how deeply Ivanova is affected by death.
Mm.
And she's only letting herself feel a little bit of this for a stranger. And it still surprises Franklin how deep she feels it.
Yeah.
And it makes it make even more sense to me, having that in my mind, to when her father dies, and she just won't do it. She won't stop. She won't let herself feel it because she knows how deep that pain is.
It's all so brief, isn't it? Typical human lifespan is almost 100 years, but it's barely a second compared to what's out there. It wouldn't be so bad if life didn't take so long to figure out. Seems you just start to get it right, and then it's over.
It doesn't matter. If we lived 200 years, we'd still be human. We'd still make the same mistakes.
You're a pessimist.
I'm Russian, Doctor. We understand these things.
This is about a soul hunter, Rachel. Do you think soul hunters are cool? What is your perspective on it? Because Babylon 5 will throw out some of these things, and you just have to... It all depends how you land on it. Is a soul hunter silly or great?
I think it's somewhere in between. I we're not allowed to give half yums as a rating, but I give the soul hunter a half yum.
Just a half yum? That's pretty bad.
No. It's a yum and a half, I mean.
Thank you. It's a Yamaha. So,
Fuck off. That doesn't come until later. Okay. Is it a Yamaha?
I think it's a Kawasaki.
Yeah.
Ninja.
The Kawasaki Ninja ZX-11, vintage 1992. I mean, we're talking liquid cool, dual overhead cam, 16 valve, 1,052cc inline four, twin ram air induction, six-speed gearbox, and 320mm front disc with four piston calipers. It's the best performance bike of its time. Or it will be when I figure out how to put the damn thing together.
I don't know. I think my filter for the Soul Hunters is very skewed. Because I can't help but think about the performance here in this episode elevating it so much.
Defines this species for me.
It elevates my position on them so much. And I say this because then there's the Soul Hunter film. And no offense, Martin Sheen's a great actor. But I walk away from the River of Souls being like, I don't know, I think the Soul Hunters are kind of stupid. I don't like them. Here...
You learn too much about them in the movie.
And just seeing them walking around in normal lighting as well with their heads and stuff. Here, he's in purpley lighting. There's lots of smoke and nonsense there. But I don't know if Soul Hunter is cool or not. I think it sounds cool. Like, the idea of a Soul Hunter is a fascinating one. But is it also... Is it too of much of like a fantasy idea for this science fiction show? I don't know.
I think that they make it fit. And I think a part of that is us actually seeing the equipment that he uses and that it needs to be set up and prepared and all that sort of stuff. And I do think it sounds like a great idea. But it's really hard to make it work.
They sense death. That is their sixth sense. They sense death. It is just a biological function of them. And in this, we are presented that they have used this function and contextualized it and put meaning to it in terms of now we must use our abilities to sense death to preserve life. With this... ability of sensing death, what else could they do? Like, in the show, they're vilified because he's crazy, but no one else likes them. But I'm trying to think, if there was a whole race of people, sentient people, whose sixth sense is to sense death and are drawn to it, what else would you do? You have to put some meaning to it. And to me, I think their meaning is, cruel for others, and this isn't even talking about if souls are real, but for other people, other cultures, it's intrusive. To me, if you have that ability, this is a logical place to go that is on the alignment of being good, because the other is that they would just make death happen all the time.
Yeah, like...
Which is what he does.
If the Soul Hunter's approach was the approach of his whole order.
And not even just that, but if instead of preserving souls even, if their ability to be drawn to death, they could have gone down the road of just being... monsters that just kill to get the satisfaction of killing, but... So what do you think? What else could they be?
So there are a few other ideas that I think that they could have done. None of them really work, but I would like to maybe explore those ideas with you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the fact, firstly, that it appears that they cannot change the outcome.
No, they're always right.
They are always right. So them getting involved and trying to, like, warn a species, like going to the Mimari and they're like, heads up, war's coming, a bunch of you are going to fucking die.
Yeah, but...
Like, that kind of thing doesn't make sense.
No.
For them. It's something that maybe, like, another species could do, but the Soul Hunters doesn't make sense for how they're set up in the show.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, you can't really do that. But something that I thought could have been a really interesting thing to do with this kind of species is to make them more death duelers.
What's that? Do they fight to the death? Do they grab their swords out like Londo and his best friend and duel it out?
No. So are you familiar with the term dueler at all?
Like, we're going to duel to death?
No.
No, I don't know.
So a doula is like a midwife, right? That's what that word means. Oh, okay.
Like call the midwife?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a death doula is a midwife for death. So they...
I'm imagining the show called The Midwife, but with Soul Hunter makeup on them. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine Miranda Hart in a Soul Hunter outfit? Could you? I could. It'd be great.
Please note that down to do for the social.
Call the Soul Hunter.
Call the Soul Hunter.
He's on a little bicycle.
No, not quite like that. But it's the same sort of thing of like help. Death doulas go to hospice, family homes, nursing homes, wherever the dying are.
Right.
And support the person who is dying and their family through that process.
I like this idea, but I can't help but remember the fact that they look like Grim Reaper people. And I don't know if I want one holding my hand as I die, looking at me with his weird eye on his head or whatever it is, jewel or bone or growth.
Well, whatever it is.
But can you imagine William Morgan Shepherd looking at you while you're dying and just going, slower now, muffled,
no.
Gone.
Gone now. Gone. If you could only see.
One of the fundamental problems with the Soul Hunter species, outside of like them taking souls in general, even if you don't believe in souls, them taking them from cultures that don't want them, is they can't even do the death doula thing that you want, because it is propositioned here that they are mortal beings. And if we go with that knowledge and tie it back to the conversation with Franklin and Ivanova, they are, from the Franklin perspective, they have lived for so long. They have determined this knowledge of souls, and it is set in stone. And since they do not have death in their own culture anymore that actually happens to them, they no longer have the concept of life that Ivanova talks of.
Yeah, because do believe that they are immortal.
Yeah. Yeah, because we will meet characters and races in the show that are immortal, and these guys may be ancient beings
yep.
that have decided what is best for everyone, as we will see with many other ancient beings in the show. But my point being is, if they are immortal and they are walking around capturing souls, my proposition is they do not understand the importance of death, they can sense death.
They feel death in a very different way. They seem to be able to feel what it is to be that person when they are approaching death.
Yes. And their aftermath perspective is, it is a loss. They die and then that's it. It's done and dusted. But for other cultures like the Minbari or like human cultures, there's a belief system there after death, whether it be the Minbari belief that the souls melt into one and transfer into the next generation, or other perspectives in the show like heaven or hell or any of that. They don't have that perspective because they are immortal. They do not die. And since their ability is to sense death, they have decided that we must stop death in any way, shape, or form. And this is the only way that they can do it for others, which is to preserve souls
they
and only good
stop
ones.
Stop oblivion from happening to select souls.
And that's also what makes them a menacing foe in the galaxy, is they're elitists. They don't even want to protect everyone. They just want to protect...
Nah,
what did he had a list of them, and one of them was like the mad lunatics or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderfully weird list of people he wants to save. The dreamers, the poets. I wanted them to say the tinker, tailor, soldier, spy.
Not all. Only the special ones. Leaders, thinkers, poets, dreamers, blessed lunatics.
He says that he's been to Earth.
Mm.
Who do you think he came for?
Trump.
Fuck off! Fuck off!
What, you don't...
Fuck off! would want his company for eternity. Fuck right off.
This guy would. This guy would. You kidding me? You don't think he want to add Trump to his children? I think he would. He's a villain for a start, so yes, I do think he would. He wanted.
Well,
to...
he does specifically have lunatics on his list, so I think it's beautiful lunatics that he says, or yeah, something like that.
Blessed lunatics.
What are your thoughts on the soul? This is one of those. This is what this episode exists for, really.
Yeah.
Is to question. To make us question our own thoughts and beliefs on what the soul is, and to interrogate what the show's thoughts and beliefs of the soul is. Not just the characters, but the show itself. What are your viewpoints on this whole entire affair?
I believe there is a soul.
Okay.
I think that there is some kind of spirit that we have in our bodies that cannot be articulated, and whether that is just the fact of biological life happening in our bodies, and that that has an effect on the way that we perceive things.
Do only humans have souls?
No, I don't think so. I think,
how far does it extend to all life? Do ants have souls?
I would extend it to all sentient life.
Only sentient?
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
What about you then, Mr. Judging Me for my view on souls?
I don't believe in souls.
No, you don't.
I don't believe in souls. I'm very much like Franklin. And when the soul hunter said, "You die, that's it," I nodded. I was like, "Yep, that's right. I agree." And he's saying it like this is a bad thing. And I'm sitting there going, no, that's it. Look, I don't care if people believe in souls, and I don't care if people don't believe. This is just what I think. I've never really thought about it. I've grown up Catholic, and my family aren't even that particularly religious, but I've never been enforced this belief of souls. I love it in narrative senses, and I love how it works
in
thematic senses.
You love it as
senses.
A metaphysical idea.
Yeah, but I'm not applying it to the real world context that I live in. No, I do not believe in souls, but I do not roll my eyes at stories like this that challenge that notion. Did this sway me
and
in my own real world perspective? No.
You're not trying to convince anybody to not believe in souls.
And you're not trying to convince anyone to believe in souls.
No.
But did this episode shake my foundation? No. Did it make me question it? No. It did make me enjoy a sci-fi concept of what happens if there was a guy with a laser beam that could take my soul. That's a fun sci-fi concept, but it goes beyond just that fun sci-fi concept. It grabs that idea of a guy with an energy beam that could take my soul and applies it to all the characters within the episode. They all have their viewpoints on the matter that are different from each other's. Some are aligned with some of each other's and some aren't. The Soul Hunter is the most abstract one out of them all, but it makes sense for what he is and what he can do. Do you believe, though, that he is actually taking souls?
Yes.
You do? You think he has a laser beam that could take your soul?
When you say it like that...
No, but what do you think?
He's definitely capturing something.
Oh, yes, yes.
Like, we see that. And I am currently hedging my bets a bit and leaning more towards a mix of what Franklin said of, like, that's capturing, like, the personalities and the memories of the person. And that's what the Soul Hunter means by capturing their soul. Because each perspective, even though they're all talking about souls, is talking about a slightly different concept.
Yeah. Do you believe that souls are an actual thing within the context of this show?
Yes.
Why?
I really should have been prepared to give evidence for my answer.
You don't need to give it, but what do you think?
It was just such a knee-jerk reaction because so many people within the world of Babylon 5 recognize and respect the idea of souls.
And so many don't.
Yeah.
When we meet Sheridan and he finds out why the Minbari stopped the war, he's just like, yeah, okay, sure. rightio then, and he moves on. I don't know. And I think that's what's brilliant about the show overall, is this is a show that tackles faith and religion in a very respectful manner. The guy creating it is an atheist, but with a strong Catholic background. But I feel like the show juggles being on the side of things are real, like the soul and heaven and all the stuff of spirituality is real, whilst also having the critical lens of an atheist perspective of being like, I don't know if this is real or this is bullshit or it doesn't exist. To me, it's even-handed in the show. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the soul is real in this show, but I believe that there are characters that believe that. But then there are certain evidence pieces that completely make certain faiths in this show fall apart to the yes. wayside. We're not going to talk about it, but we don't have time. But the more we learn about Minbari souls and what they're all about, the more questionable their entire yeah. religious structure becomes, and not in a bad way, like the show does a bad job, more in the show deliberately makes it more and more questionable, okay. like most religions. You can pick apart and it becomes questionable after a certain point.
I thought of something where I'm like, okay, this is just me backtracking from the end of the show,
mm-hmm.
which is that I've now realized that to me, the species going beyond the rim is them going beyond the physical realm, and it is those people's mm-hmm. souls departing. Leaving.
That's definitely the imagery and the stuff the show is invoking.
That's like a very strong reason why I think that souls are real in Babylon 5.
And that's an underpinning of the show. But then there's the contextual thing of, oh, they're just literally going beyond the rim of known space.
Yeah.
So you like have it both ways.
You get to interpret it.
A quaint lie. Pretty fantasy. The soul ends with death. Unless we act to preserve it.
You know what you don't get to interpret? Delenn being a Satai. My biggest issue...
And, like, why the fuck is a vice president pretending to be an ambassador on a space station where three of the previous ones have blown up and one of them just fucking disappeared from motherfucking space without a trace?
This is my big episode problem. There's so many pieces of information repeated again and again and again and again and again.
It's just like if you start watching after the second ad break, you get to find out.
Again.
That, and if you've been watching from the start, you get to find out like five motherfucking times.
There was so
like
many.
Like, we get it.
Like, maybe just have... I could sit here and say, this is how this could be fixed. This. But the issue is still at hand is... The two pieces of information we hear over and over again is the Soul Hunters' mythology of them being able to do this and what they do of specific souls, and that Delenn isn't actually secretly, is not an ambassador, but she's one of the head people of the entire fucking Minbari government, and she's on this space station pretending to be ambassador or acting like one. What purpose? For further lore. I'm a fan of this episode, but I don't know if I can say that I like it fully because of that reason. I feel, as much as we've talked about character stuff, this chooses mythology, lore, and world building and foreshadowing stuff far more than I would like. Again, to tie to the first episode, Midnight on the Firing Line, had all of this stuff too, but it also had far more character moments. And the Soul Hunter episode, I don't know whose story this is supposed to be. Who's learning what here? Not who's learning specific information about Delenn being a Satai, but what did they thematically learn here? What did Sinclair thematically learn here? Did it challenge his beliefs on souls? No, because we never really got to find out what his beliefs on souls really were. Did it challenge Franklin's? No, because this wasn't Franklin's story. He was in the background of it. And Delenn, what did it challenge her other than she was physically challenged by having her blood drained from her? And we got to learn some interesting lore about them having more blood than us. What do you think about all of these statements here?
I think they're all true. One of the big differences between the way that we are interpreting and analyzing this episode is you are really holding it on its own. And I am choosing to focus on how it relates to the rest of the show and how so many little moments build up things and connect things.
Would you say this is a pivotal episode, though?
No.
That's my issue. Like, I'm not... I know the bigger context things of it, too, and I do appreciate those, but
it
is...
But you wish that it stood on its own.
I do wish that... Well, not even that. I just wish there was more character-filled stuff here.
Yeah, but the first that's episode... what you need for it to feel balanced and to feel good about saying, this is a good episode of television.
Yeah.
Because this episode does these things. Not giving it credit for what it does.
Yeah.
Because we had that problem with appreciation of Discovery.
Right.
Being like, oh, well, they could do this and they can do that and they might do this. Mm. I'm doing the same thing, but I know what things pay off. So I can say, well, yeah, that's good because it links to this thing and it goes to this other thing and we do learn what that means. So that's great because they set it up here.
But as an episode, to watch, is it enthralling as to me, it has to be an episode instead of feeling like I'm reading stuff on the wiki. And the only thing that really pushes it over for being a really good episode to watch is the conversation between Ivanova and Franklin being really well done, really well acted, really well said, and the performance from William Morgan Shepherd. And of course, Rachel McGrath. He's here. He's here. What were your thoughts on when you saw this big praying mantis? Now, remember, people, I said to Rachel that this was a really good science fiction show.
Yeah.
So... when you saw the big praying mantis from Buffy in this, how did you feel?
I was just like, well, yeah, okay, of course.
You
whatever.
Just accepted the big praying mantis boy?
I did. And then you were like, oh, what did you think of McGrath? And I was like, who? And you were like, the giant mate, like the giant insect. And I was like, when...
How could you forget? He's only like five episodes of the whole show.
You never forgive that I do not have such a deep attachment to McGrath.
McGrath is the dumbest thing in the show. I'm going to call it now. Everyone shits on Byron and Warren Keffer and all these things. Those are bad. But this is one of the dumbest things in the show because McGrath only has one thing he does, which is give people the ability to walk around the ship real good. And how he does that is by saying, the price will be high. Take a drink every time McGrath wiggles his arms and talks about how the price will be high. What did the Soul Hunter pay him with? Does a Soul Hunter have the money? Where did the Soul Hunter get money from? I just assume that they go from place to place like vultures. I didn't think that the Soul Hunter like earned money, or did he steal money? Where's the Soul Hunter story in which he robbed a bank with his Soul Hunter beam, right? Like, where did he get money from to pay McGrath? Oh, can we appreciate, this is such a tiny thing, it's so stupid, but I loved it so much. McGrath has these two rhinoceros looking bodyguards or whatever, weird bodyguards outside, and the Soul Hunter walks up, smacks his foot on the ground and goes, "Huh!" and they separate in fear of him. And it was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in the show.
At this point,
it was so stupid.
Because it's just like, McGrath has hired these people to try and protect him. And they're just wusses.
And an elderly old man who goes, "Huh!" makes them afraid. It was the yum yum moment of the episode. And this is even...
just said yum yum, and then that's
no,
what made
just one yum yum. And this is before we see the giant praying mantis guy, who looks terrible. He looks garbage because he's in like this really bright lighting to show off how fake he looks. It is just
so weird.
I miss McGrath though. Give me more McGrath. Every new person who's watched this show, other than you, that I've encountered, are weirdly drawn to McGrath. It's either in a mocking way or in a sincere way. They're drawn to him because he's this weird thing that doesn't belong in the show. Like how we said in the pilot, there's certain aliens and certain sci-fi things that don't feel like they belong, and they eventually phase them out, just like Nagrath. Nagrath does not feel like he belongs in the world of Babylon 5, like the giant praying mantis guy doesn't feel like he belongs here.
It does make sense that there is somebody like him in down below.
Yes, like a criminal, alien warlord guy, cool. Big praying mantis guy who's just like, must pay price higher. I don't know if that's the guy. I don't know if that's the guy that we want to be. Just think about this. The giant praying mantis outsmarts Garibaldi.
Yeah.
All the time.
All the time.
Garibaldi can't arrest the giant praying mantis guy. How funny is that? How bad at his job? Garibaldi's so bad at his job, Delenn can just take his gun from him without even trying.
Yep.
Garibaldi sucks, but in the best way. I love Garibaldi, but like as a security guy, he can't even arrest the praying mantis. He can't even capture the elderly old man with a rupee in his head. And he lets an ambassador lady steal his gun. Far out, guy. I can see why he got fired from place to place he's been serving at. That guy needs to get his shit in check.
And this is when he's sober.
Ask a silly question, get a silly answer.
Now we come to the actor's spotlight.
Spotlight!
Where we pick a particular guest spot actor from the episode and discuss them as a performer in this episode and an actor in general.
What we know them from, what other people may know them from. Yeah, mm-hmm. Highlight them in general. So,
There was only one choice.
Oh,
which
yes.
Which was?
The second Soul Hunter guy, of course. The one who came on and spoke in a very British accent.
You were about to say.
Oh, yeah. William Morgan Shepherd. So, Rachel, tell
who
us.
Who is the Soul Hunter.
The Soul Hunter. And I think the best Soul Hunter out of them all. I think he set a standard that no one, even including Martin Sheen, could ever reach. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about him, Rach.
Okay. He was born in 1932, died in 2019.
I was bummed when he passed away. Like, I mean this sincerely. He was one of those character actors. Because of this, I really paid attention to, and when I heard he passed away, there was like this big sigh of sadness because, yeah, he was a character actor, and he played roles only he could play. And there was like this great loss in the entertainment world to me of, oh, we're not going to have that essence that he brings to a role is lost. Just like how he says in this episode about souls, but like, not, you know, not to be funny, but like, he was one of those character actors I was genuinely bummed about passing away. But hey, he was working right up to the end, a real professional.
Yeah, I think his last credit was 2017.
Yeah.
His first credit was when he was 29.
Wow, he entered the film and TV scene a bit later than you would expect, huh? Mm-hmm. Are you going to mention who his son is? We've got to mention who his son is. Go on, talk about him, because you've seen him in more stuff than I have, I think.
So, his son has appeared in a lot of sci-fi as well.
He, like his father, is one of those guys that's in, like, every pop culture thing one could put in.
Yes.
So, the son is Mark Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Many may know him for Supernatural.
Yes.
Firefly, he was in a few episodes, right?
We'll get to his performance in Doctor Who in a little while.
Doctor Who, and of course, X-Files. Mark Shepherd was in X-Files as well as an Irish pyrotechnic guy. I always remember him. He's tweedly-dee.
Okay. So, I want to start with some other things that I just found entertaining of... I can imagine a lot of people going, oh, hey, it's that guy.
Yeah, William Morgan Shepherd really, really was that character actor that he was in everything. He was in a majority of the big things. And if he wasn't, his son was. Like, he wasn't in X-Files, but don't worry, Mark Shepherd was in X-Files.
he did mostly TV things, though. That was most of his credits.
Yeah.
But the two films that I picked out as just being like, of course he's in those. How did I forget that he just has a random appearance in these two movies?
Yeah.
One that I haven't watched and one that I have. The one that I haven't watched is Transformers.
He's a voice. He's a voice. And what a voice. That's the thing that's most memorable about Soul Hunter to me is his voice. The way he would have a real frailty and then a real deep boomingness to it. The way he would say, gone.
He plays it.
Gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yes, beautiful. He has like such a sense of appealing to his audience and trying to manipulate them of like the people who were in that scene with him because he has a specific purpose.
He's channeling three important things as Soul Hunter just through his voice. He's imposing, he's frail, and he's insane.
Yes.
All three are captured so beautifully in some of the same lines of dialogue with just his voice alone, just him. Ah, oh, what a voice.
And then the other is Over Her Dead Body.
Oh, he was a priest.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that. For some reason, this creepy old man, and I say this in the most loving of ways because he had a look to him, played priests a lot. He was a priest in Dexter, and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is just wonderful. I remember him in both, actually, because I don't know why. I guess he just liked playing priests. I guess someone looked at the Soul Hunter and thought, priest?
Yeah, I guess so.
Did you remember he was in Gilmore Girls? He was an elder of the town or something. That's interesting, right? I have a few that I thought were interesting. Like, for most people, this guy, you know, he's in a big amount of pop culture stuff. He was in Max Headroom. He was in a lot of Max Headroom stuff early on. And then he was a prominent voice of one of the villains in Biker Mice from Mars. A lot of voice work. He was in the Medal of Honor games as well as, like, one of the generals, which I found interesting. But I remember recently in my watching of television shows, I was watching Mad Men just before the pandemic hit, and he showed up as Price's father. And instantly when I saw him, I did this. I clicked my fingers, pointed at the screen and yelled, perfect casting.
Yeah.
Perfect casting. Because he was just perfect as like the old British guy who's disappointed. Perfect casting.
Anything else that you want to talk about that he was in?
Every Star Trek.
Okay.
Pretty much, he was in the movies a lot, and he was in two of the movies, 6 and 09.
In four Star Trek things, mainly.
Yes.
So, he was in Star Trek Undiscovered Country.
He was the Klingon prison warden guy on the
Commander,
colony. Yeah. Yeah, with the one eye, because he himself only has one eye, or had one eye.
Mm-hmm. Yes, That happened when he was young due to, like, a botched surgery.
I didn't know that. I just thought he had a walkie eye this whole time. I remember him in TNG. He stole Data's body in The Schizoid Man, I do believe. I read he was in Voyager, and I couldn't remember the episode of Voyager.
So
it's called Bliss, but I don't remember who he is.
In Bliss, it's the one where a wormhole appears that leads to the Alpha Quadrant, and that's how they get the letters back.
Yeah.
And 7 of 9 is just like, okay.
I don't get no letters.
I guess everybody's excited to get back.
And he was in the Abrams movie as a Vulcan, which I think is the weirdest casting choice for this guy.
I
remember when we
voice in that.
No, he was physically there, and we watched it recently on our Patreon, and I pointed and said, hey, that's William Morgan Shepherd. But let's talk about Doctor Who. We've got to talk about Doctor Who. It was probably one of my most favorite little things Stephen Moffat's era ever did, which was have Mark Shepherd play the young version of this character in the 60s. And
Do
then
you
when
remember
we travel.
His name?
No, he's
They
FBI.
Say it all of the fucking time in that episode, I assume.
I don't remember.
It's Carlton Delaware.
Carlton Delaware.
Canton.
Mark Shepherd plays the young version. And when they travel to modern times. The old versions played by William Morgan Shepherd, and it was cute.
It was so endearing.
It was so fun and cute. Did you know, though, Rachel, that William
Morgan...
He was
the runner-up for Jakar?
He was the runner-up for Jakar, and that's what I was going to lead to, was he was in another episode of Babylon 5 as Jakar's uncle.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that knowledge that this guy could have been Jakar?
I can't imagine it not being Andreas.
I think this guy, I think William
Morgan... He would have brought a very different thing
I think
it.
He would have been less jovial of a character. I think he would have been a far more stern character. I get that vibe from William Morgan Shepherd as an actor. I've seen him in many things, and he's usually pretty stern. I don't see him as jovial as Andreas Katsoulis. That was hammy.
I can't imagine Shepherd being able to do the turn...
Oh, I could.
That Jakar takes. I just can't imagine anybody doing that as well as
Kasulis. I actually could see him. It's just more like
it would be so different to me.
I think it would be more stern.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think Jakar would be a less light character if he had played it, but still a compelling one. Yeah. I think he would have nailed it in that sense, but it would be a darker character.
It would have been enthralling, but I really like the levity of the performance of Jakar that we do get.
But yeah, William Morgan Shepherd, I love his performance in this episode. It really does elevate it. Just memorable, menacing things, like the way he would stand and the way he would move his body and the voice in particular, his teeth and his eyes. And
you know what's a lovely little moment that really lets us know that he is a threat in a very specific way that you kind of only appreciate once you're rewatching the episodes. It's like one of the first proper shots that we get of him is that close up
of his eyes opening up when death happens.
And then no, before that even, I think.
Yeah, while it's happening.
Like he can kind of sense that's happening, that's starting, and he doesn't want to let them know that he's awake and that he's switched
on.
Yeah,
just silently standing there.
So no, he just because it just pans over to his eye and it opens for a second.
Then he closes it.
And then he closes it with such purpose. Such and it's slow because it's just like, no, now is not the time.
Any questions?
Si, do, ri, cho, ma.
He's all yours, Doctor.
I'm going to get on my soapbox for a moment here, Rachel.
What's that soapbox made of, right?
Oh, DVDs. I actually owned the Babylon 5 DVDs as we are watching them, the show, via those because I do not have...
Oh, you're going to complain about that specific scene that had a bad transfer so there was blue stripes
No. So, I as a child was confused by the DVD's artworks because there were certain things that were inconsistent and things that were outright wrong. And as an adult learning more and more about them, the more angry I've been about it. So on the back of the DVD, they have Delenn from the pilot instead of Delenn from this show, which is interesting. I don't know why they did that. But on the movie pack for The Gathering, they have Delenn from the show rather than Delenn from the pilot. And it seems like nobody cared about these DVDs in a lot of ways, but also cared too much. So
yeah,
for instance,
it's odd.
Yeah, so for instance, like, there will be on the booklets as well as the DVDs themselves, they'll have images from the episodes that will feature on that disc. Mm. But some images aren't on the ones from that certain disc. They're from later episodes. But the most baffling to me as a child, because again, to raise for people this knowledge again, I grew up without the movies for quite some time. I had to buy them later in life, so I was unaware of certain things from these movies. On the DVD, the Soul Hunter that they had a picture of was not of the one from this episode, but from the TV movie, The River of Souls.
Gotta make you think that it's Martin Sheen in the show.
Martin Sheen as a Soul Hunter. And I was confused. I was like, where's this guy? This guy wasn't in the episode. That's weird. Why would that be there? And I've learned now over the years that that's a guy from a separate thing entirely. And it really makes me annoyed because... Mm-hmm. That's not the guy from the episode. Not only is it not from the episode, I look at it and go, what, they don't have respect enough to put William Morgan Shepherd's one on the disc, on the cover, on the artwork? That pisses me the fuck off. Out of all the inconsistencies of the DVDs, the second season has like a Minbari ship upside down. That pisses me off too. But this one pisses me off the most because there's a lack of respect there.
One, just add something for the benefit of the listening people. This annoys Ryan so much that he will often refuse to put the DVD in the DVD player because he doesn't want to see it. / he's being lazy. Or two, if he does,
I'll complain.
He will tisk at the DVD as he gets it out of the packet and puts it in. He's like,
it just upsets me because
every single time.
Because in a way, to me, it's just dismissive of Warner Brothers or whoever put this DVD together of his performance and this characterization. Like, that's the guy, not Martin Sheen. Martin Sheen's in the fucking movie. I don't give a shit about Martin Sheen's performance or not. That's not the point. It's the point of they're racing William Morgan Shepherd on the DVD cover art, and that's silly to complain about, but it's a niggling thing, and I wanted to bring it up as something because it is a part of something that affects me on the rewatches. I watched the episode going, oh, this guy's great. They couldn't even put him on the cover art, though.
Yeah, you couldn't even put him on the cover art.
Yeah, I give that a yum. What would you give this episode? Yum being bad or yum being good?
I want to hear from you first.
I think I'm going to give it a yum.
Yum.
It's very similar to the pilot to me, in which there's lots of cool stuff happening here. Makes you think, makes you feel. But in a way, there's actual less character stuff than in the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think that's a big detriment. I like the Soul Hunter.
But Garibaldi says who he is.
Oh, there you go. Oh, there you go.
So yum, yum, yum now, right? 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 Right?
She's falling apart, guys.
You changed your rating, right?
What do you give this? A yum being bad like me or a yum yum being good?
Okay. So I've sung the praises of this episode. And it's a yum.
Yum.
Why? I'm actually shocked. How did you get here?
But
this isn't my beautiful wife.
Aw. Because as an episode, it's yum. It's okay. It's not great. It is great because I chose to see what's good in it. There are many faults with this episode, with the lore, with the script, with the balance, with the perspective character. All of those things are true criticisms.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I really enjoyed watching it on this specific instance, I feel like it's more of a yum than a yum yum.
Fair enough.
After discussing it, you changed my mind.
I changed your mind. So, Rachel, we'll be covering another episode of Babylon 5.
On the next Babylon 5.
According to the DVD booklet, the third episode is called Born to the Purple, and the description is wonderful. So let's hear it, shall we? When it comes to political manipulation, Londo Malari knows where the skeletons are buried. His purple files hold scandalous secrets about Centauri royal families. When it comes to love, even Wily Londo. Wily Wabbit Londo may fall victim to a plan to seduce those hush-hush tales from him. That is so perfect.
Adira.
The better Adira character in our sci-fi shows we've covered, or will she be? I don't know. She's played by a lot of vagina. That's it, Rach. Where can people find us on the internet?
They can find us on various social medias at Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast, including Twitter, Instagram,
Facebook,
Reddit.
TikTok, Tumblr, all of the socials, everyone, including Bebo. Ray just looking at me like, you really pulled the Bebo card, huh? MySpace, AOL, all of them.
Okay, Ryan, you can continue listening to defunct social medias, or we can discuss our Patreon.
Well, we have a Patreon in which we are covering the Star Trek movies, we are covering the best and worst rated episodes of Star Trek, and we are giving our general thoughts on other things, other TV shows, games, movies, podcasts. So head on over to our Patreon to get that extra juicy yum yum content. Email us at yumyumpod@gmail.com with your thoughts on the episode that we have discussed or things that we've said. Let us know how you're enjoying the show and how you're enjoying Babylon 5 on your watching of it. That's yumyumpod@gmail.com. And if you people have not already, make sure to give us 5-star reviews, or as we call them, yum yum reviews, on all the podcast catchers available that can do so. And please, we're new, we're young, we're innocent in terms of covering Babylon 5. Share us around. Tell all your friends that are into Babylon 5 that, hey, these people called the Yum Yum Podcast, they're actually pretty good. They're doing Babylon 5 right now. You should check it out. That's it, Rach. There's only one way to wrap this episode out, like every episode. I think we've agreed now. It's a tradition. It's a tradition to say it. Let's do it. 3, 2, 1. Good eating to you.
I really thought you were going to do a fake out, so I didn't say it.